Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday,
1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to you with your host, Avenger Satanus, and the Beast.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the Ooze. It's Saturday, 1 o'clock. This is T.C. Downey, and my co-host, Avenger's here with me. Avenger, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's Halloween, which is cool, and yeah, I think we got a good show, so I'm doing good. And, yeah, the number for people to call in is 347-989-1371. So hopefully people do that, and we can talk to them about ritual magic and everything that has to do with that.
Right. Actually, before we get into the topic today, though, I thought it would be a pretty neat thing to kind of just give everybody an update about the Cult of Cthulhu. You had some news come through this past week, right? About or did we cover this last week?
Actually, we covered it, but we can mention it again. It's kind of big news. Yeah, we got approved by IRS for the 501c3 tax exemption, so we are now exempt from paying like federal tax. And charitable donations are also
tax free,
tax free. So yeah, we get to do stuff without a lot of government hassle and pay taxes on things that it's basically a nonprofit. So I mean, it just makes sense. There's some people that would argue that churches, just like everybody else, should pay taxes and contribute. But I think you have to go back to intent. If there's an organization that their intent isn't to make a profit, then why should they have to pay out as much as a corporation like Microsoft or McDonald's or Pepsi or whatever?
Right, they're trying to make a difference and do some good, and that should certainly be recognized by the U.S. government and a credit given for that.
Right, I think so. I think a lot of that ambivalence might stem from stuff that Anton LaVey was saying way back when. But as much as I admire Anton LaVey and the Church of Satan that he founded while he was alive, I don't really care for the organization now. But, I think a lot of the whole, churches should be taxed, religion should be taxed, just like everybody else, rhetoric, kind of came from sour grapes, because he wanted the Church of Satan to be like that too, and originally it was. But then the courts decided, the way he was using it, that it really wasn't a normal nonprofit, tax exempt sort of organization or religion. And so he lost that status, and I think then he decided that, well, if he can't have it, no one should. So kind of railed against the idea that the churches should be tax exempt. But I don't know. I think it's a good idea, and I think it allows, grassroots movements to flourish. And, buy property and build buildings and facilities and, get things going. Whereas it'd be much difficult if you had to model yourself after, like, a profit-making organization or a corporation.
Right. I think that it would probably be a lot of extra work that's unnecessary in the type of environment that you're trying to create.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And so since we're actually talking about churches and religion and so forth, let's kind of hobble back onto our main topic, which is something that's actually, in my opinion, used pretty much universally through just about anything you believe, and that's ritual magic.
Yes. Ritual magic.
It's actually from my take, my view on it, it's used in just about every type of religion, everything from mass to little voodoo seances.
Right. Yeah, I can't think of any religion that doesn't include some sort of either ritual or magic, or usually both. I mean, that's kind of what religion is all about. I mean, not necessarily like just the normal religions you think of, like Christianity, etc., but really any group that is trying to do something extraordinary, I think. I think that you can classify that as a religion, in a sense. You know, if there's a certain shared belief and goals, then any kind of collective could be called a religion. And I think, rituals and magic are necessary to accomplish those goals.
And I think that people might argue that today's Christianity doesn't actually use magic, but the rituals themselves, you know, when they were first written into the religion, they had that intent entirely, and it's obvious.
Right. Well, even prayer today, I think, is, you know, a form of magic. You're basically asking some god or some higher power to do stuff for you, you know, to make your will happen or to recognize your own desires and to nudge reality in the right way. And that's, you know, if that's not magic, I don't know what is.
I think, as we've discussed before, the perfect definition of magic is using your will to get something that you want, correct?
Right.
And so in that classification, of course, it can't be denied. All of that's magic.
Yeah. The Cthulhu cult's official definition of magic is willed change. So any change that occurs that has been influenced by your will can, in effect, be called magic. So it's hard to differentiate between, you know, going in your ritual chamber and, you know, commanding a horde of demons to do something for you, as opposed to, you know, doing something in the real world that other people might not think about, you know, doing something kind of sly or clever to get your way. I mean, that's magic, too. You're basically
right, lesser magic, in fact.
Yeah, exactly. Lesser magic, lesser black magic, as opposed to, you know, quote-unquote, greater black magic. I don't know if that originated with the Temple of Set, or if that was around the Middle Ages. I don't know. But
actually, Eliphas Levi, when he was writing Greater and Lesser Keys of King Solomon, I think that the concepts that he outlined there are what we base our modern view of it on.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, like I was telling you the other day, I've never read it, and but I've heard a lot about it, so I should probably get that on my reading list, but at this moment I haven't read it. But hey, at least you have, that's good.
It's not fresh in my mind by any stretch of the imagination. It's been some years since I've actually opened up any of the pages of that and read through it. So, I wouldn't exactly quote me on everything that I say here. This was just my take as I read through it.
Right.
Now, actually, getting back to ritual magic, LaVey, he categorized it in, what was it, four categories or three?
Three.
Three categories. And that was the compassion,
mm-hmm.
Lust,
right,
and vengeance, correct?
Destruction, vengeance,
And, we talked a little bit about this week, and you actually, you seem to agree that those are the ultimate three categories, and everything can be, scrutinized and put into those three categories.
Yes. I think that's the perfect categorization of magic and its uses. I can't think of any sort of ritual that one would perform where it didn't come into one of those three categories. Compassion, helping yourself or someone else, getting money or a job or, some sort of something like that. Or even power in general. Lust, everything to do with attraction and sexuality. And then, destruction or vengeance, basically eliminating your enemies. Every ritual falls into one of those three. So I think those are pretty much essential when you're beginning a ritual or you're beginning research to create your own ritual. I think that's one of the things you have to think of first. Like, what's my intent? What do I want to do? How does that fit into my paradigm? Or, what am I really asking for?
Right. I think, and this is just my opinion, but I think there is a fourth category that it falls into. And I think that a lot of us miss it because we don't realize the representation of it. And that is honoring. For instance, throughout my time, seen rituals that are set just to honor certain gods and deities. There's, no other intent, no other purpose.
Okay, that's very interesting. I've of course heard of that too.
I think that actually falls into an even more personal level than what most people think. Like, for instance, if you have someone that you love deeply pass, it's often not uncommon to have some kind of a shrine within your home to honor their life force.
Right. But wouldn't that be sort of an extension of a reciprocal relationship where you do something for that person or god or demon or whatever, and it's sort of expected, maybe in an implied way, implicitly, that they're going to do something for you in return. And if it's not basically, if it's not sex-based or destruction-based, if you put a gun to my head, I would have to say that, considering the three categories we just named, it would probably go under compassion and, big sort of power. You just want to gain, you want to benefit. I think on some level there is, a direct link between, honoring someone and expecting to get something in return. And I think that's very left-hand path. I think if you honor some sort of god or deity or being just solely for the purpose of aggrandizing them and giving them attention and energy and power, and then you don't ever expect anything for yourself in return, that's more right-hand path. That's more, basically the slave just trying to suck up to the slave master just so he doesn't get wiped out or something. I mean, even then, someone is getting something out of it. But it's more of a fear thing than an equal thing. And I think that's very important for the left-hand path, is to see the beings that you're communicating with or you're in a pact with as more or less like equal, on equal footing. you know, seeing them as equals. Obviously, they know more, and they're more powerful, and they can do more on certain dimensions and certain planes. But at the end of the day, you're not, you know, bowing and scraping and saying, oh, please, Master, I'm so not worthy. Like, you know, don't destroy me, but give me this little thing. You know, you're more saying, like, you're more commanding. Like, hey, you know, I need this. Do it for me. And, you know, then you will be rewarded as well. So we both gain, and, you know, our mutual relationship can continue.
Well, I think that perhaps you're right, and maybe it is just a very strong defined subcategory of the three main categories. But
that could be. And I'm not saying you're not right. And if someone wants to call in and, you know, argue with me about it, that's awesome, because I'm not here to say, like, oh, this is the right way. You know, I'm just saying things from my opinion, just like, you know, the Beast Zeno is talking about things from his own perspective, and that's, you know, and people can disagree, and that's cool. And maybe I am wrong. I don't know. But I think it's a fascinating topic you brought up. It's something I really hadn't considered until now.
Well, it's something that I had been batting around back and forth in my head because, you know, and prior to each show every week, I try to spend some time researching the subject matter at hand beyond what I've done in my own spare time for myself, you know, just to maybe hopefully enhance the show a little bit and bring something to it because, well, obviously, you know, we're not beating down the callers yet. So
you mean you've actually been doing your homework, whereas I've been slacking and winging it.
That's right. I've been doing as much of my homework as quick as I can, just kind of give something of quality to our listeners who, I mean, they're obviously there. Our archives show that our listeners are there.
Well, all I'm going to say is, hey, I have lives. I can't always do the homework. I can't research everything 100%. You know, half the time I just call in like completely drunk and on the smack, and I don't even know where the fuck I am half the time. So it's a privilege for you guys to just listen to me, just talk out of my ass, and the Beast talk about stuff that he actually knows about and has researched and has formed a logical opinion about.
One of the things that struck into my mind some time ago about ritual magic was that it can be done in solitary. It can be done amongst a group of people. I wonder about the effectiveness of the ritual given the variables and the condition. I mean, is it more effective if you have a group of people working with you or by yourself, or does that depend particularly on the work?
Right. Going back to something that LaVey wrote about, I think it's better to have fewer people that actually believe and actually put forth their energy into it, knowing that something could happen. With the best intentions, rather than have like a bunch of people, like a whole giant group with a couple like non-believers, or not non-believers as in like people can't be skeptical or have reservations, but if someone is in there thinking like, oh my god, this is so much bullshit, it's really probably going to fuck with the whole energy and the whole vibe of the ritual. So I would rather have as few people as possible that are really there for the right reason. They're really there because they want to see something happen, and they want to give it their all, and they're not going to half-ass it. You know, I guess one or two people that are, you know, extremely skeptical or, you know, not really into it, you know, it may not destroy the ritual itself, but it's not going to help. So
certainly, well, they're definitely not lending their energy to it.
Right. Let me throw that the phone number up one more time. It's 347-989-1371. So call that if you want to come on in and talk to us about the topic or a little something else or what you think about the show, what you don't think about the show, whatever.
Right, definitely. I completely encourage people as well to give us a call. This is supposed to be an interactive platform. So let's get some interaction going. Did it ever... I guess I've always been fascinated with ritual myself. Even in my extremely atheistic days, I understood that the psychodrama of itself definitely unlocks channels inside of you that you weren't aware existed.
Right.
And so in my opinion, perhaps it's better to have a large group of people and a good portion of them not even really agreeing with what's going on, but their presence, their activity, their participation of it is adding to the psychodrama and ultimately leading the mage, into a deeper and deeper state and allowing him to open up channels within himself. So,
right. Yeah, I would agree. I think it's part of the psychodrama and part, just the collective energy that have and are putting into the ritual. It opens up certain doors, or it acts as a key and it opens up certain locks, and it gets things going. It creates a different energy, a different atmosphere that is conducive to working your will and the whole black magic phenomenon.
When we initially decided upon this topic, I was batting back and forth in my mind if people ever even really do these rituals, because it's difficult online to actually target the same ritual performed. I shouldn't say the same ritual, but rather the same desired results through ritual being performed. Through different philosophies or different paradigms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I of course only had a week to study, so if I don't find something immediately in my first couple of Google searches, I typically tend to, think of the next thing that I can go and look up, and then I start searching that, and before long it falls to the wayside. But you and I had to actually discuss this, and you felt differently. You felt that people did do that.
Right.
They did actually take the time to perform these rituals themselves.
Yeah, I believe so. I think a lot of people do it secret, or maybe they're, I don't know if I want to say shy, but they're hesitant to, blog about it or write a whole essay or even a forum post or say like, oh yeah, I did this ritual and this is what happened and this is what I did and these were my results. I mean, sometimes you get that, but not a whole lot. In fact, someone was commenting or sent me a message about one of my YouTube video things involving like a ritual, like a Cthulhu cult ritual. And they were saying, why would you open that up, I guess, to a public forum and, and show what you're doing, whereas he thought that it should be done in private and the profane or the non-believers or whatever shouldn't even be able to witness such things. And I guess that's a valid opinion. My take on it is that why not let it see what you're doing? It's not going to affect the ritual at all. It's not going to hurt you, but it could help people design their own rituals or prompt them to get off their ass and like actually do something and performing their own black magic or, you know, whatever.
Right.
To get people noticing and interested, maybe.
I tend to side with you and agree here. Definitely opening it up to the public view, the public perception. I think that gives it the ability to have more power, more clout, because you're not hiding in the corner, you know, sitting in these dark shadows, you know, scurrying something, but rather you're out in the open, you're public, you're, you know, you're confident in it. Not so long ago, I had a conversation with a girl who actually she preferred to do her rituals alone, in solitary, and extremely secretive. And her logic being that the intent of magic is to get what you want, and if you have a group of people, everybody's asking for their own part from the same deity or being, and ultimately that's kind of muddying up the water, so to speak.
Right.
But I disagree. I think that, you know, everybody can get what they want out of the same thing. And working together even, you know, it can't be so one-sided as to just one person being the only one that reaps the benefit of such an act.
Right. Right.
Obviously, if you just go with the basic thinking of the psychodrama opening up a different level of your consciousness and allowing you to use deeper sections in your brain, you know, if everybody's reaching into that same depth, they're all drawing something from it.
Right. That's a great thread that I just wanted to comment on quickly. I know we talked about this before, the documentary, What the Bleep Do We Know? Which is,
right.
It talks about quantum physics and string theory and basically the idea that, yeah, magic works because you're affecting your own consciousness and your consciousness can have a tangible or empirical effect on reality itself. And that's an important notion for black magic. I mean, that's the foundation of it. And if we can look at closer at the science, why that is, I think we would be closer to understanding magic in and of itself and why it works and how it can be used better and more effectively.
Excellent. You know, everybody kind of cracks up and laughs about, you know, the people in your traditional Christian churches that they go into that whole talking of the tongues thing. And, of course, we all chuckle and in our minds it's, you know, them being overly dramatic to aid to the show, you know. But I think in a sense, even if that is the case, you know, it helps to build the psychodrama and ultimately, you know, it can lead to successful results. For instance, my mother, who's Baptist, she got involved with these folks that were in a laying of hands church is how it was explained. And she went to a few of these meetings. And she herself had been suffering from terrible pain for a while, and she asked to be healed, and all this psychodrama stuff went on. And she did actually, render some positive results. So, I mean, I even on the white lighter aspect of it, you're still looking at it being effective.
I actually have the benefit of being at the internet right now at my fingertips. And there's also another word for that. And hopefully I won't butcher it too bad. It's glossolalia. Glossolalia. That's a tongue twister in and of itself. But here, the at least one dictionary definition of it is glossolalia consists of strings of meaningless syllables made up of sounds taken from those familiar to the speaker and put together more or less haphazardly. Glossolalia is language-like because the speaker unconsciously wants it to be language-like. Yet, in spite of superficial similarities, glossolalia fundamentally is not language. And it does talk about Christian whatever, but I've heard that term used by like chaos magicians and, you know, in other black magic rites and, you know, left-hand path practitioners. I think it's definitely a valid tool to speak in tongues or just sort of this nonsense language, because for one thing, it turns off the conscious mind or the mind that that just chatters away about just stupid things that don't really matter. That's the part of the mind that I'm talking about, like the part of the mind that just blabbers on about nothing in particular. That part gets turned off, and the part that goes deeper and that can actually turn on higher centers of consciousness, that can activate, especially when you get more into the psychodrama and, you know, you feel almost taken to a different place or taken over in a certain way, not actually possessed by a demon or anything, but there's that sense that you are in a different space. And yeah, I guess that's it. So yeah, no matter who you are, you know, Christian or left-hand path or whatever you're using it for, I think that's a very valid tool, just to start speaking in tongues and, you know, and get in that different headspace for your ritual.
Right. Now, I'm curious if authors such as Lovecraft, when he was, you know, playing with the idea of the Aklo language, which was actually originated by another dude. I don't remember what his name was, and I'm not in front of a computer, so I can't look it up. But it makes me wonder if those alien tongues, and we kind of touched on this, but those alien tongues actually, you know, they produce different sounds, which key sounds and unlocking different layers of our consciousness.
Right. Yeah, actually, I am still at the computer, so I'll just look it up on Wikipedia. Aklo is a secret language, possibly an artificial cipher, or that used by a non-human race associated with the writing of forbidden texts and evil cultists. Aklo was invented by author Arthur Machen in his 1899 story, The White People. It was later used in the works of H.P. Lovecraft, who was a great admirer of Machen's work, appearing in his Cthulhu Mythos stories, The Dunwich Horror and The Haunter of the Dark.
Right, so the idea here is that those sounds, those words, which aren't really words, sounds that reach into your subconscious and give you that eerie sensation or feeling.
Right. Yeah, I think all language has that power, and it communicates not only to other people that may be listening, but it communicates and activates certain keys within your own self. I think that's why neuro-linguistic programming is so powerful, because if you keep telling yourself something like you're awesome, or you're powerful, or you're a ladies' man, or whatever, eventually, if you hear it often enough and you believe it, then it will come true. Just because language has that power. And you don't need glossolalia or speaking in tongues just to communicate with that higher, deeper consciousness. You can just use powerful words. And it doesn't have to be, you can use a different language too, like the words that the LaVey came up with for his satanic keys based on Enochian, or you can just go straight to the Enochian source by Dee and Kelly, or the Cthulhu cult language that I came up with, or, you know, or the Sumerian stuff from the Necronomicon. Really, anything that you aesthetically feel has power or takes you in a certain way to a different place, consciousness-wise. I think any of that can have a huge impact and a lot of power. And, yeah, I encourage everyone to use that, not only in your rituals, but in your daily life. Like, if you use certain words, like if someone asks you how your day is, and you say, I'm okay, well, then chances are pretty good you're going to continue to feel just okay throughout the day. But if someone asks you throughout the day, or different people ask, like, so, how are you doing today, or what's up? And you say, like, I'm great. Well, it may sound silly the first or second time, but I promise you, eventually, especially over many days and weeks, if you say that you're doing great, you will feel great. And by that transformation, you will be doing great. And you'll improve, you know, basically your whole life a little bit across the board. And that's the power of language.
Right. Now, I'm sure that our listeners by now are trying to figure out how all of this correlates with the idea of ritual magic, but my actually bringing it up, my intent was to express that the words being used in the ritual by each and every participant or practitioner that's involved in it, those words all have that those certain set of tones and sounds that are meant to reach in and unlock that particular section of your consciousness and allow those channels to open up.
Yeah.
You might actually ought to take some time and consider, because I know that next year you plan on actually beginning the third book in the trilogy of the Cthulhu cult Bibles. That might be subject matter that you devil into there.
Yeah, perhaps. I want to do something that's as different from Cthulhu Cult and Libra AO as Libra AO was different from Cthulhu Cult. So I think people will recognize that I took a very much a different tack on the second book than I did the first. And I think the third book is going to be completely different. I have the seeds in my mind of what maybe I wanted to do. And I was thinking about having it be like a Cthulhu Mythos novel in the way that Sutter Kane was writing Cthulhu Mythos novels in the movie In the Mouth of Madness, where the story, as it's read, not only conjures up certain images, but it creates a certain reality. And in fact, the book itself is a magic ritual.
Perfect.
Yeah, so I'm toying with that idea. I think that's what I'm going to go for. But, yeah, I haven't started it yet. I probably won't start it until next year. I'll probably work on it all through 2010, and then early in 2011, I'm planning on unleashing it to the world. And also in 2011, that's when the Cthulhu 3, the third giant mass convention, or conclave for the cult of Cthulhu will take place, probably Walpurgis Nacht 2011. I'm not sure exactly where. I would love to do it somewhere else that's not my hometown of Madison, Wisconsin. Excuse me. I'd love to do it somewhere else, like California or Las Vegas, or, you know, depending on where people will want to go, or depending on the following. I did toy with doing it in Chicago last year, and I might have had better results for that because Cthulhu 2 was extremely sparsely attended. I think a lot of that had to do with the economy, but a lot of it had to do with people just, I don't know, wussing out, unfortunately. But that happens, and you move on. But I am looking forward to Cthulhu 3. So, but that's a long, long way from here. So, I don't know.
Okay. Sorry, I had to step back for a second, and I was trying to get a feel for how much time we had left in the show.
Yeah, we have about 5 more minutes until the undiluted truth. If you want to, I could play one of the things that we've got.
Actually, yeah, if you would redo the spoken word one, I think that's a valid entry for today's show.
Okay, here goes.
I first learned the facts from a lunatic in a dark and quiet room that smelled of stale time and space. There are no people, nothing at all like that. The human phenomenon is but the sum of densely coiled layers of illusion, each of which winds itself upon the supreme insanity that there are persons of any kind, when all there can be is mindless mirrors, laughing and screaming as they parade about in an endless dream. But when I asked the lunatic what it was that saw itself within these mirrors as they marched endlessly in stale time and space, he only rocked and smiled. Then he laughed and screamed, and in his black and empty eyes, I saw for a moment, as in a mirror, a formless shade of divinity in flight from its stale infinity of time and space and the worst of all of this world's dreams, my special plan for the laughter and the screams.
Awesome.
Yes, that was cool. Every time I hear it, it's like a whole new revelation. That was Current 93 doing a little collaboration with Weird Tale author Thomas Ligotti, who writes sort of in a Lovecraft, Edgar Allan Poe kind of tradition. He does like gothic weird tales. It's basically horror, a little bit of science fiction maybe, or, you know, mysticism, occult thrown in. A lot like The Twilight Zone. Thomas Ligotti is still alive. He doesn't write fiction that much anymore, but the stuff that he did years ago is phenomenal. And I highly recommend Mr. Ligotti to anyone that likes short stories and anyone who likes Lovecraft and just weird-ass stuff, because he does it better than almost anyone.
Right, actually, it's amazing the way that his composure with words is. As you sit and you listen, it's just that, a little over a minute clip?
Yeah.
Listened? Yeah. You know, it doesn't take you very long for you to set into the imaginative world where, you know, you're just hearing what he says, and your mind is actually forming, you know, different images or flashes of images, and as he's describing his thoughts, and it opens this parallel in your brain where, you know, that eerie sense, that eerie sound is no longer annoying, but in fact it's soothing, and it seems like it's
like part of your consciousness itself.
Right. I think that that heavily relates to what we're talking about today, because I think the whole concept of ritual in itself is not necessarily that you're pulling out this millennium-old grimoire and you're, you know, reading and researching and saying this ancient spell, that these are these exact words that open this gate or you know, call this deity or accomplish this thing or that, but instead it's the ability to take your mind through and put it in the correct place.
Right.
And
yeah,
actually,
oh, go ahead.
No, please.
Go ahead.
What I was actually saying, trying to follow my thought now. once you've gotten into that place, it's much easier to do the work.
Right. Right. Yeah. Getting into the proper space in your mind, that's important. And that's a testament to the power of language, because that can do it, just as your physical surroundings. You know, everything from what you're wearing to the color of the room you're in to the angles of the room you're in to your altar. You know, that's pretty key. Your little implements or idols or books, candles, you know, if you have a sword or a wand or something like that, that's all very important. And I think that's where the psychodrama comes in. You know, you're setting a scene and you're creating a different atmosphere for yourself in order to work this magic. And I think people can do it without that, but especially if you're a beginner, it's great to have those things on your side to get you into that different state of consciousness.
Crowley, Aleister Crowley, actually, from everything that I understand, he spent years of time perfecting each ritual that he performed. And every little single detail all had to be related to it. The place that he slept, the foods that he ate, everything.
Yeah, I think he would fall into the category of obsessive compulsive.
Yeah, but he's
really into that.
Yeah, he will remain infamous because of it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of what you have to do. You have to be somewhat obsessive about a certain thing if you want to have a certain degree of recognition or ability in a certain thing.
I had the opportunity when I was a young child to meet Alan Trammell. Was a Detroit Tigers ball player back then. And he was really good, and he came out to our school, and he gave a little speech, and he explained the difference between those that are great at what they do and those that are just good at what they do. Those that are great at what they do, they obsess over every little detail. They work consistently and always towards that goal, where those of us that are good make a half-hearted attempt or maybe, you know, even a 90% attempt towards accomplishing that goal. And then when we fall short, we're, you know, obviously disappointed, but at the same point, not surprised, because we didn't really pour everything that we had into it.
Right. Yeah, that's a great lesson.
And I think that's the lesson that Crowley actually has laid out for us.
Yeah,
and
that's the essence of the lemma. You know, you've got to will something, and not only will it with just your mind, your body, but with your whole being.
Right. I mean, he went to depths as deep as going and sleeping in the crypts of pharaohs. You know,
pretty hardcore. Across,
yeah, that's very hardcore. If you think about it, I mean, I know people
now these days.
No, you won't. But I suppose it's still all very possible if you have the will to do it.
Oh, definitely. I mean, people right now could be planning something for tonight that would blow people's minds or blow their own mind and surprise themselves and just do something that's, like, unbelievably cool and, you know, take pictures of it or make a video or, you know, write a short story or something or do some artwork. You know, how hard is that? It takes some effort and it takes some imagination and some will, but if you really want to accomplish something in this life, you've got to do stuff like that. Otherwise, you're just going to fall by the wayside, and your life is going to be here today, gone the next, and, you know, what have you got left? You know, what are people going to remember you by? So, yeah, I would encourage people to, like we always do at the end of the show, to be active and get off your ass and do something, because, you know, people aren't going to do stuff for you.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Please finish.
Yeah, people are going to recognize your greatness if you're not doing things, if you're just kind of half-assing it.
Right, well, you're not going to be great if you're not great.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm going to throw up a challenge. Everybody who listens to this, every single person that listens to this, I want you to right now grab a pencil and a piece of paper. I'm going to give you the email address for this show. That's theooze@fearthebeast.com. Theooze@fearthebeast.com. Now, my challenge is this. It's Halloween night, Soween. This is traditionally when the gates open between the worlds. Let's do a ritual. What I want from you, I want you to go out, I want you to perform it, no matter how big or how small, no matter what, I want you to write down A, what you're trying to accomplish, B, what category you felt that it fell into, and C, if you've seen any results since.
That's a great challenge. I think people should do that.
And I'm going to do that tonight. Venger, I'm sure that you'll find a few minutes to do it, right?
Yeah. I'm going to be working some sexual magic mojo. So hopefully that pans out for me.
Awesome. So we'll tell you about our experience next week. You folks do the same for us. If you're not going to call in and participate, at least shoot us an email.
Yeah.
The use
we can talk about
at
emails we got on the air.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you can remain pretty much anonymous. You can write, please leave me anonymous.
Right.
You know, but shoot us an email, theooze@fearthebeast.com.
Yeah, at least your experience to some degree will be captured and you may influence someone else out there, which is awesome. Yeah, that's great. One thing I wanted to mention now that we're kind of in the anything goes category of the show. I don't know if you've heard about it, but they are remaking the TV series V. Is it Visitor?
Yeah, actually I have. I loved that as a kid.
Yeah, I did too. I was just telling the girl at the gym earlier today that I loved that, and my friends loved it too. So much, in fact, that we started like a V fan club in grade school in like sixth grade or something, just because we're that dorky and that much of a geeks that we felt the need to celebrate this show in whatever way possible. And it's basically like Star Wars. And when I say Star Wars, I just mean like a vague blanket science fiction paradigm. Because a lot of people that may not be into science fiction don't know, you know. So basically Star Wars meets the A-Team. Basically you got aliens and spaceships and laser guns meets like human guys driving around in vans with machine guns, like blowing shit away.
You know? Right. But there's also the actual religious aspect that paints across Star Wars as well.
Yeah, or Star Trek, or, you know, any stuff like that. But it takes place on Earth. I think that's also very cool, because it gives it sort of a verisimilitude that this shit could happen here, like, tomorrow. You know, aliens coming down and doing whatever they want.
Yep, it certainly could. And for the people out there that are so blind as to think that we could be the only living species in this world. I mean, not in this world, but in this universe or any universe beyond it.
Exactly. But the new version, or the remake or reboot, starts this Tuesday night. I believe it's 7 Central, 8 Eastern. I'm definitely going to watch it. In fact, I'm planning a little party gathering over here for people that want to come over and watch it. So, hey, if you're in the South Central Wisconsin area, let Venger know, and you can come over to his pad and watch V for the first time on his big screen TV.
Awesome. Now, were you more of a fan of the reptilian race, or were you, championing the humans?
I had mixed feelings. You know, I loved both aliens and reptiles as a kid, and I just thought that was a very cool idea. But at the same time, you know, you are human, and you feel for the people struggling against this outsider, like almost fascist state that that tries to deprive humanity of not only its resources, but its freedom. So, you know, I kind of like the whole thing. You know, I like the conflict between, you know, the visitors and the humans, and I like the whole sex thing too, the whole sexual aspect, which I think is important, and I think that's what current shows need to incorporate in their writing, so it has an audience and people watch it every week. A lot of people, enough so a show continues instead of dies out. I think the Battlestar Galactica would have continued and been a much more successful show, especially later on in the last 2 years, if they'd shown more Cylon human sex. I mean, if people are honest with themselves, that's what they want to see. You know, that's what they started with when the show began. You know, that hot blonde girl, the number 6 model, she was fucking people, you know, every other episode. And that's what drew people in. That's what people want to see. And I think if this new V series has, you know, visitors and regular humans, like, going at it like rabbits, then that's just going to make the show more successful.
I concur, man. I concur.
Yeah.
I think that'll definitely add the dynamic to keep it humanly attractive.
Definitely.
I mean, let's face, you know, there's only a few things that really captivate people's minds, and sexuality is certainly on the top of the list.
Definitely. I think that's important. I think the show, our show, will always touch on sexuality, because I think it's such a fundamental important of magic and the left-hand path and just humanity in general. Quick question, Beast. Am I supposed to physically hit the outro at some point, or do I wait until the
show? Yeah. At 1 minute is usually when I try, but we end up usually going through our thank yous too long, and then it just plays out, and our shows actually are like an hour and a minute or something like that.
Okay. I think we only have a minute left.
I certainly do. I want to thank you. You've been an inspiration, and you and I's relationship has become a living example of what we hoped views to become. It's in a constant exchange of ideas. I want to thank my mom, I guess, for making me today, because it's Halloween and this is my favorite day. And so, okay. But anyway, that's pretty much it. And thank all the assholes that didn't call in.
Thank you, assholes. We're just kidding, sort of.
Yeah.
And you get to go trick-or-treating with your son. It's awesome.
That is awesome. Okay. And it's your turn, man.
I'd just like to thank the curvy blonde girl that's driving up 5 hours today just to see me and spend the weekend with me. That's very cool. Hopefully we have some great times. And that's it. Otherwise,
awesome.
Adios.
We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Use. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily reflect those held by Venture Abuse or any institution associated with us. The Use does not condone any illegal or unethical acts. If you have been offended during the production of the show, we're sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Thank you, and see you next week.